and fulfillment of a desire. That is just to serve him. Then we can stay in the shelter of Krishna's service. And that's the point. I appreciate the point that you're making. I was just thinking about abstractly, there's akamasava kamova, and then there's jnanakarva and avratam. So it's okay with it, and it's do without it. So there's that tension. So this is the ultimate message, is do without it. If you can't do without it, come with it. But tivrena bhakti yogena, not just bhakti, but very strongly, very seriously rendered devotional service. Then there's, and hearing the message in that mood, then it may penetrate. Not just I should approach for some material desire, but just to serve the Supreme Lord. Yes.
Sanjaya was a spiritually elevated person, and Dhritarashtra was considered as a spiritually blind person. So what was the mood of Sanjaya while serving him, and why he was so attached to
Did you hear the question back there? No. Okay. Comparing Sanjaya and Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra was spiritually blind. Sanjaya had spiritual vision. Therefore, how was it, with that assumption, how was it that Sanjaya saw himself in service to Dhritarashtra? Yeah. Well, the initial part has a given that may not be exactly right. He was very dutiful to Vyasadeva in serving Dhritarashtra. So specifically, how was he attached? How was it he was attached? He was obviously attached, was not based on spiritual vision. He cared about him. So the good side is not just like a gross kind of material attachment, but he cared about the well-being of Dhritarashtra. And he didn't know that Dhritarashtra had caught hold of a higher purpose. He just knew Dhritarashtra as an attached person. And therefore he was worried about him. Just to make a little bit of a parallel, it's not a one-to-one correlation, but some people in the room here, your parents may know that you have some interest in Krishna consciousness, and they may not be in touch with a higher purpose. They may just be not knowing that higher purpose. They may be fearful. What will be the consequence of this? So they don't have, they may not have touched themselves with higher purpose. So therefore, their attachments are stronger. They're lacking spiritual vision. And that's part of the tension of, it's in the Bible too. The tension of persons who somebody was telling me this one. Nutama was telling me this. It was in an anti-cult conference that he went to, and there are some passages in the Bible where Christ speaks, you know, cast asunder the bonds of family life. You know this, Jesse? No. Anyway, you know, what to do if parents become disturbed, and you know, basically it was a classic anti-cult statement, or cult leader statement thing, just something that when persons become very strongly involved in spiritual life, those who are strongly attached to family life panic. Not always, but sometimes. And so it's part of the, in conventional, I'm getting off in another area, but it's a conventional problem within our Krishna consciousness movement that our members have to be very, very careful with those who have material attachments in one's life, so that they're not unduly disturbed. But may not be that you can impart spiritual wisdom to them either. So somehow it means making a nice balance of being as normal as possible so they can carry on without being unduly disturbed. Anyway, that's not your question. So Sanjaya had some attachments. They're exhibited. It's because of those attachments that his intelligence got bewildered. And he felt cheated. But he does have great spiritual capacity because as soon as Narada comes and addresses, he's okay. Or, you know, it's at least repair is done from that feeling of attachment. It depends on circumstance. And one of the things that we discussed yesterday was a question about receiving praise. It was the opposite. Receiving praise and, you know, not knowing how to handle those circumstances. A comment that I made is there's an act of grace in both giving an apology, and when someone apologizes, receiving an apology, and then receiving a compliment and offering a compliment, because they can both be done in both directions, can be superficial. I know I'm supposed to apologize, so I'll go and apologize. Anyway, so your specific, it requires, it may not be, what you're expressing is you want to be able to have that person's heart be touched so that you know that you're forgiven for the mistake that you made, you know that you made. And it may be due to a lack of, this is one circumstances, it may be to a lack of how to gracefully accept an apology. And one way to not knowing how to gracefully accept an apology, to minimize it. But it also may be coming out of a graceful acceptance of the apology, but saying, no. If there's no offense, don't worry. But for sake of your concern, be assured there's nothing. The slate is clean. There's nothing. If you feel, you don't need to feel that way. Because there's actually nothing. I felt no offense, and there was no offense, and you may feel that there was an offense, but there was no offense. So it's a clean slate. So it's good to give somebody that reassurance. But it may be that just by, although their response may be minimizing or making that other statement, I don't know how to exactly characterize what you said, but, oh, you're just very sensitive and actually, so you may very well be, you have touched their heart. So, how to assess whether you have or have not, that's subtle. And it is important that the acceptance is there. That's our instruction. if you offended a Vaishnava, then you request that Vaishnava's forgiveness. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says this, you can go back and request in Madhurya Kandambini, if the person fails to give their forgiveness, then request again, and request again, request again. If it still fails, then you turn to the Supreme Lord. Anyway, the first point is kind of my experience that devotees by nature are gentle and forgiving, and if there's a lack of clear expression that forgiveness is granted, it may just be that the person doesn't know exactly how to express that. We're lacking in gentility and grace. We don't know exactly how to express those things. But it's good to be concerned. Has that been accepted? Generally, you can tell based on the ensuing exchanges with that individual. Arati? No. Someone over there? Okay.
37. You mentioned that such cheating was necessary for a great cause, and there is no loss for any party in such transcendental fraud. Yes, my understanding on this type of thing is this can be done very, very rare occasions.
That's right.
When
by very, very divine souls. And that leaves most of us out of it. The rare exception in divine souls. Yeah. For us, it's a good rule, forget it. But there may be some exceptions. I mean, I can say, my accepting sannyas, or you know, joining the Hare Krishna movement. My parents weren't going, yeah, go, go, go. I did it. And I knew that something like this wasn't deception or fraud, but I knew that there would be some disappointment. But it's that's different. But it's not completely different because that's what Dhritarashtra, he did, he left, but he didn't say. Because he would have been checked. Then it would have been a disaster. His life would have been just ending with the reactions of all of those sinful deeds and an attached consciousness, and it would have been a different result. So, it's very rare by very special souls that something like you just read can be done. One example that Prabhupada gives is Sanatana Goswami. He was in the custody of the Nawab Hussein Shah, who was holding him hostage, although he was the prime minister, because he refused to continue in the post of prime minister, he was put in jail. So he took care of the jailkeeper by flattery and offering him gold coins. And then when the jailkeeper said, well, what will I do? The Nawab will have my head. He said, well, just tell him that he went to pass Stool by the river, and he had his iron chains, and he fell in the river, and he didn't come back, and must have drowned. Just tell him that. So that's an example. So we're not Sanatana Goswami. So we should be very careful. Practically speaking, we're not eligible for this. Yes. Go ahead. You're not asking a question. Okay.
This is the point that you made at Sridhar Prabhu's house about performing our activities with great attention.
Yeah.
When we do our work, our daily duties that we have, say for example, work that I do, how does one convince oneself that this is going to purify me? Because I offer that food for a regular of the contemplation, but how do I convince myself that this action or this activity is going to purify me?
I think we can all address that question a little bit. It will not purify you unless you perform it for Krishna. If you're just getting some of the fruit from that work that you do, then it'll purify you materially by making that sacrifice, some whatever portion you contribute to Krishna, the fruit. And so that the third position is just a karmi, so karmi, karma yoga, and bhakti yogi. A bhakti yogi performs everything for Krishna, even ordinary things for Krishna. So that's the challenge of someone who is performing work. And one of the things that may happen is one who thinks very, very seriously about that question is they may have a breakthrough, or they may decide this isn't a suitable activity for one who wants to perform his work for Krishna. Maybe I should look for some other activity. Or by reading very carefully in the Bhagavatam, I'm doing this, just advocating Kalki's alternative over here. Maybe a way I can do my work for Krishna is just by living very simply and not having this, that, and the other thing that I try to engage in Krishna's service coming out of the earnings from my work. You know, it's a common question, it's a very fundamental question. I think I'll let some of the others speak something on this too.
As far as my understanding goes, this is definitely a challenge at some stage in devotional life. And Prabhupada recommends, and he gives different examples of different exalted devotees to follow in their footsteps. And of course, his example as a grihastha is also very shining, brilliant, and worth following. So there are different directions that are given. If someone is starting at karma yoga, then how to elevate himself to the point of bhakti yoga. There are quite a few guidelines, and it may be a seminar in its own, but there are definite guidelines for that.
Well, specifically, I mean, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing as a high court magistrate is quite a different thing
than somebody who's doing software engineering or database management for who knows what. I mean, maybe some good, some bad, and some mixed causes. How's that for Krishna? What to speak of, you know, the particular activities of where your brain space has to be fixed in order to do the job effectively. The technicalities and staying always, you know, up with whatever the latest is, and you have to do that in order to perform the job properly and do that for Krishna. That's what you mean, right? Specifically, not just... Any realizations out there?
Omar, there's one story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita regarding the hunter.
Kalki likes the story. I like the story too.
And I'll just kind of give a short general idea of the story. Gary the hunter was a hunter, so he used to hunt animals in the forest. And he would have children. So Gary came upon these half-killed animals and sought out and found who was killing them. And he met Murgari the hunter. And he revealed himself as the same person as Murgari the hunter. The hunter, he asked, "Oh, what can I do for you?" And Murgari said, "All I'm asking is that you don't eat the animals half killed. Kill them all the way right away so they don't have to suffer." So Murgari the hunter thought about this, and he asked Narduni if he would instruct him to become his guru, the spiritual master. And Narda said, "That I will do, but first you have to break your bow." Murgari said, "Well, if I break my bow, how will I maintain myself and maintain my family? I'm a hunter, it's my occupation, it's how I live." And in that purport, in that story, Prabhupada explains that one who thinks that his occupation is the source of his maintenance doesn't understand that actually Krishna is maintaining everyone. And his occupation is simply the activity that he has chosen to engage in. And so this is also a topic for a bigger discussion. But the basic idea is explained there. It is something, it is quite a deep topic to really understand clearly, but one can situate oneself however they are comfortable and contribute to the mission or the purpose of the Supreme Lord in many different ways. But gradually, if we can understand that what we do, we have to, you know, bring this into perspective that actually Krishna is owning and controlling everything. And we get what we deserve to get, regardless of how we function. So much pleasure, so much pain is coming. But still, one has to have some realization how to situate oneself comfortably so we can be enthusiastic to make a contribution to the purpose of Krishna. That will bring us, will strengthen our faith and realization. That was a good story and a good couple of reports to read to help understand.
Maharsha was thinking that going to work is also practice and dependence on Krishna, whatever, because we can go to work thinking, this is my solution, or this is how I maintain myself, but also one can, I guess, I mean, for me it has been difficult to jump, but slowly, as we go to work and say, this is doing everything in the, you know, this pleasing to Krishna, from getting up early and going there and depending, that's the practice of dependence, wouldn't be that eventually the Supreme Lord would guide you then, whether this is the right work or not the right work, and you begin to have more detachment from the sense, this is mine, and this is my profession, and then that's been kind of my new experience with going to work.
It's an ongoing. I confirming what she's saying. My sense of this is that if one takes that question and ponders over it very, very carefully, not just put the whole button or, you know, I can't figure it out, so I'm not going to bother myself about it. I'll just continue working, maintain myself, give something to Krishna, and forget that part of Bhagavad Gita's message. Srimad Bhagavatam's message is work for the satisfaction of Krishna. I'll just karma yoga, that's best I can handle. So if one takes it seriously, again, proportionate to one's sincerity of purpose, then just like she's saying, in increments of indications from Krishna, some transformation will start to take place where some indication will come from Krishna. How? It may be many different shapes, like do this thing with other devotees. So we'll have at least devotees association, and then take jobs that are only for good causes and not for, you know, but just tighten our belt and do that, or whatever the thing, whatever shape Krishna, whatever direction Krishna takes it in, Krishna can take it in, if we're very sincere in our purpose towards pleasing Krishna. And until we enter into that arena of what does Krishna want me to do besides some way of livelihood, maintenance? How can I be Krishna's instrument and please Krishna? You don't have a very deep, sincere purpose towards that end. We're an automatic pilot. We never get an answer to the question. It's like, nor does the Lord give any direction to persons who worship Him for material gain. Not that we're going to work to worship Krishna, but, you know, unless we're very sincere in our purpose, we don't hear. We don't get the realization. But ask it, and gradually, how becomes more clear. Our purpose transforms, and our life, the shape of our life transforms. Krishna is transforming our life.
It's a growing up process.
Yeah.
It's a slow process in most cases, unless somebody is ready to
take some
go
fast speed
forward.
Maharaj, can I speak to something?
Don't just tell me. Tell the group.
Okay. In there are similar.
No, they're out there. I'll be able to hear you.
Okay. Once Maharaj was in Terahat, India, so similar question one boy asked, how I can offer my work to Krishna. So Maharaj answered that when you go to the work, make sure that you are thinking of Krishna periodically, like every 15 minutes or half an hour. Just make sure that you're thinking of Krishna.
Well, thinking of Krishna is different than the question he asked. He asked, how can I feel satisfied that I'm doing this work for Krishna?
So you said, followed by that, that there will be some detachment and that will give you kind of conviction that you're, or it might help you in something like that. Getting a track to work more for Krishna.
Yeah. Like again, it's incremental. You have to begin somewhere. Okay. So, this may be, I'm not going to finish the chapter, I don't think. So, because the other program is at 5:30, we have to have prasadam, we have to get there. How far is the next place? 45 minutes. I think I'll just resign myself to not finishing the chapter, and we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Yeah, but it...
Yes, sir.
chair too?
Yeah.
You may stand. Is there a little, like, something? She has a bad knee. Come forward. You have a chair? One more chair? A folding chair or something? He's taken, is a new lease on life. Inner direction, inner purpose, Prabhupada has stated. Yeah, inner vision, and he's not just leaving out of frustration like Yudhisthira thought he was leaving, or leaving out of anger like he thought, but he's leaving for a higher purpose. And I'm trying to summarize how he does that. It's pretty amazing. But before that happens, Gandhari also joined him, and Vidura also joined him. So all three are gone from the palace, and Yudhisthira gets up in the morning and performs his religious duties as a perfected householder, Vaishnav, will do. And then he goes to pay respects to his elders who aren't there. So then he turns to Sanjaya, the servant or secretary of Dhritarashtra, who loses composure, can't speak, and then gathers his wits and says that your uncles, your aunt, Gandhari, they're not to be found anywhere. I don't know where they are. All I know is they cheated me. Feeling frustration and anger, which follow attachment. We know that from Bhagavad Gita. And just at that moment, Narada Muni appears. So, while Sanjaya was thus speaking, Sri Narada, the powerful devotee of the Lord, appeared on the scene, carrying his tumburu. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers received him properly by getting up from their seats and offering obeisances. Now, being born in the West, I was a little bit astonished when I had the experience of that this happening, what was being described. And then after a little education, I came to understand this is is what a cultured person does. So it's like when you come in the airports, in some airport, an international airport, there's a picture of at least somebody with their folded palms. Maybe just the palms, or maybe a person with folded palms, pranams. But this is a cultural thing. Out of respect, when someone enters, when a person who one is to offer respect to enters the room where one is, one stands. So, this is what the members of the with Yudhisthira and what Sanjaya did, and I'll make a particular note of comment. When I came in the Govinda store this morning to speak to Dwarkanath, who was on the phone, Raja Govinda was also there, and being a cultured Vaishnav, he stood up as I entered. And at my left, he sat back down and continued his dialogue with Dwarkanath. But it's a sign of culture. So, in America, culture is powdered into oblivion by the grist mill of our modern education system, where differences are not cool and kids tease other kids, and so they, anything that's culturally unique, they learn to not do it because it's not cool. And so they stop being cultured, and then when they're adults, they continue being not cultured. It's unfortunate. So, but it's not only in America. It's all over. Just on this, on a cultural note, I was in Houston once. The devotees there had requested, it's about 4 years ago or 5 years ago, they requested a seminar on the duties of a grihastha. So it was a 4 or 5 day visit, and every evening in somebody's home there was a program on that topic. So one evening, some of you may have heard this story before, but one evening I was describing something that, that Prabhupada said about the duties of grihastha. So one young American devotee had recently gotten married, and the next morning he went on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and his wife was in the crowd, and so he made his way up to the front and asked Prabhupada, now that I'm newly married, can you please tell me what my duties are? And Prabhupada said, your duty is that after preparing your meals, you go to the door and call out 3 times. Is there anyone who is hungry? Please come and take your meal. And after everyone has been fed, then you can take whatever remains. And the devotee narrated the story to me and said he thought Prabhupada didn't understand his question. So the morning walk continued, and towards the end of the morning walk he asked the same question, hoping he'd get the correct answer this time. He got the identical answer, verbatim, word for word. And as I was narrating this, so the idea was that one should be charitable, and there was a specific form of that charity. And there was somebody in the audience that looked like he was convulsing as I was telling the story. He was... I said, are you all right? Right in the middle of the lecture. He said, I have to say this, that when I grew up in a young boy, as a young boy in my village, that's exactly what my father did. He went to the door and he called out 3 times. And then he went to the roof and he put some prasadam on the roof for the birds. And then after feeding whoever came, then there was one sadhu in the village. And he would not take his meal until the sadhu came to his home and accepted his meal. Then he and his family members would take. I said, wow, there's culture. And then a tear came down his cheek. I said, what happened? He said, I went back to visit my village and it doesn't happen anymore. I said, really, tell me. Just right in the middle of the program, started crying. He said, the sadhu is still there, but nobody pays any attention to him. And my father's deceased, but I don't know anyone. I went around in the village and no one does that anymore. He said, the culture is gone. He's very, very sad. And like that, so many cultural points are just poof, gone. So if we went out, you know, we're not out the front door of Ramesh's house and called out before we serve our prasadam, anyone who is, no one's going to come. We can call, but no one's going to come because there's no culture for doing something like that. But it's America. Anybody in this neighborhood, they can take care of their own meals. So we don't have the example, we don't have the opportunity so much. But so some form to maintain the principle so that culture doesn't just get completely worn away into nothingness. These cultural points that are being brought out, it's important for us to meditate on, at least within the context of the society that we live, how can we express that in an appropriate form? Like standing to offer respect, it doesn't cost anything, it doesn't harm anybody, and maybe somebody doesn't really understand what you're doing exactly, but when Roger Govinda stood up, I understood what that meant. It's respect. And when somebody is offering something in charity, it's understood with that. So the form may be different, but cultural items are very, very important to preserve and express the teachings that we're hearing in Srimad Bhagavatam. So now, this section is just 3 verses long. And in this section, there's a list of qualities of Narada, and as I'll read some of the sections of the purport, you can look at the things that are on the board, and actually they're new ones that are presented. And if we had another board, I thought we had another board. But anyway, maybe someone can write it down on a piece of paper and we can do it later. Here's a description of the qualities of Narada Muni, explained by Srila Prabhupada. Devarshi Narada is described here in this Bhagavan due to his being the most confidential devotee of the Lord. Narada is a Shaktyavesh avatar. Does everybody know what that means? We discussed it yesterday evening, remember? Shaktyavesh avatar. Narada. No, but yesterday, after the program at your home, you came and asked about Vishnu and Krishna. Then I explained the term avatar. Then I explained there's 6 kinds. Yeah, you were saying das avatar. So I was saying that's in one category. That's lila avatar. But then there's 5 others. Remember, the manus, manvantar avatar, purusha avatar, the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. Guna avatars, that's a 3rd category. So another one is Shakti, Avesh, avatar. So Narada, Shakti, put the two parts together, Shaktyavesh. Break it apart, it's Shakti, Avesh. So Shaktyavesh, avatar. It's a category of avatar. Like the Das Avatar, they're Leela Avatars, that's another one, another category. Narada's in the Shaktyavesh Avatar category. He's an avatar of the Lord, although he's Jiva soul, he's not Vishnu, but he's bearing a potency of Vishnu. The Bhakti Shakti. The energy of the Lord's own devotional service. Bhakti Shakti. He's an avatar also, Narada. And so he's being addressed in the verse in Sanskrit as Bhagavan because he's such a confidential devotee of the Lord. The Lord and his very confidential devotees are treated on the same level by those who are actually engaged in the loving service of the Lord. Such confidential devotees of the Lord are very much dear to the Lord because they travel everywhere to preach the glories of the Lord. So this is one of the activities of Narada, or one of his qualities. He's bearing the Lord's bhakti shakti, so he gives it out.
And he goes here and he goes everywhere to give out. And by his doing that, he endears himself to the Lord. They travel everywhere to preach the glories of the Lord in different capacities and try their utmost to convert the non-devotees of the Lord into devotees in order to bring them to the platform of sanity. And Prabhupada expands that word sanity. Actually, a living being cannot be a non-devotee of the Lord because of his constitutional position. But when one becomes a non-devotee or a non-believer, it is to be understood that the person is not in sound condition of life, or not sanity. Just being devoid of their natural quality of devotion to the Lord. The confidential devotees of the Lord treat such illusioned living beings. Treat in the sense of like a medical doctor treats a patient. Now, treat can also mean like how you treat another person. You can treat a person nicely, you can treat a person cruelly. Vishvambar was not here now, but he was bringing this up yesterday, that the method, like Vidura was really letting Dhritarashtra happen. You were like a cat dog in the house of your master eating the scraps off of Bhima's plate. Get out of here immediately. So, in an immature mood, sometimes, probably nobody in this room, but sometimes devotees will use the philosophy like a stick and hit people with it. And if someone isn't to the standard, then hit them with the stick of, you're not following the standards. Pow! Pow! But so that's not the right way of treating the patient. And certainly Narada didn't do that. So we discussed this, but it's worth repeating. The treating of a patient, one of the things that do they give classes in this in medical school and bedside manner for patients? Do they teach how to properly make the patient feel comfortable with the doctor who's giving them the treatment? They just, huh? A little bit. A medical doctor treating a patient, is the phrase that they use was bedside manner. The doctor being able to calm the patient and gain the confidence of the patient and trust that the doctor is going to, here comes this big needle and it's not going to hurt so much, here it comes. But it's good for you. Little pain, but it's good for you, so here we go. So, in our practice of Krishna consciousness, in assisting Narada Muni and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and all the great distributors of bhakti, one of our greatest responsibilities is to bear the qualities of the teaching that we're presenting, and exhibit those qualities, and through very carefully demonstrating the quality of the message that we're presenting, gradually build a relationship of confidence and trust with the individual, and then in that confidential relationship, extend the message of the absolute truth. So it's 1, 2, 3 step. It takes time to build that relationship. Again, this is a topic that Kalki and I have spoken about a number of times already. Relationships in Krishna consciousness are amongst the devotees, not only, you know, from Narada to his disciples. Here's Yudhisthira's disciple of Narada Muni. Not only in spiritual master-disciple relationship, but just God-brother and God-brother, members of the devotee family, the relationships that we conduct with one another, and the qualities that we share with one another, and the trust that we build with one another, and the confidential ways that we disclose the realizations that we have about the message of bhakti with one another. That's, again, like Kalki was saying, that's the most important thing, or that's one of our primary goals, is having such loving exchanges. Prabhupada writes it directly in Nectar of Instruction, that our Krishna consciousness movement was founded to foster such loving relationships. And that's the way of helping to elevate ourselves and one another. Narada is exemplifying that here. So after a reception, Maharaj Yudhisthira begins to speak. He gets the opportunity to present his questions. So very much like he asked Sanjay, he's now going to ask Narada, Oh, godly personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt, who is grief-stricken by the loss of her sons. And Prabhupada's comment is that Gandhari is a very exceptional personality. Repeatedly in this chapter he calls her an ascetic. And by an ascetic, it means, the meaning of that word is, one who undergoes voluntarily not only austerities, but very severe austerities. And steadily does like that. So the dynamic of this is that he knows that she was an ascetic, and as Prabhupada says in the purport, an ascetic is never disturbed by all kinds of sufferings. But Yudhisthira is the kind of person that although he knows that she's not disturbed by all kinds of sufferings, he's still feeling great empathy for those tribulations that she has to endure, although she's not feeling any suffering from those tribulations. He's caring about her welfare, although she's quite okay. Like this comment of traveling in the north, traveling in the Himalayas when Dhritarashtra went. He said, the Shukadev Goswami is describing that it's like a warrior getting a good thrashing. He likes it. Or devotees that are brahminical in their inclination, when there's some opportunity for austerity, like Nirjala Ekadasi. Sunila Madhava was liking it to death. It's not that he feels that way, but maybe some of our congregation members might be intimidated by no water. Not only no eating, but no water. Huh? Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi this Friday. So, I thought I would just connect, because we're all going to be making a choice this Friday what we're going to do for Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. I thought I would connect this Bhagavatam subject with that. So we're not ascetics like Gandhari. We're not practiced at no food and no water for stretches of time. But one of the comments that Prabhupada makes here in this whole chapter is, or just after the last section, is when Dhritarashtra left home, he was dhira. That is, although he was separated from his relatives, he remained undisturbed. And how did he remain undisturbed? he had the association of Vidura. And he had a higher purpose. So when this Friday comes around, we're making our decision about what we're going to do. If we can, what's the higher purpose of observing Ekadasi or observing Nirjal Ekadasi? Well, one thing we can think of that's beneficial is we get the benefit of observing all Ekadasis if we observe Nirjal Ekadasi in that way. So we can think this is a good deal. 24 for one. Good investment. Good business deal. Right? Just pay once, you get 24 of them. Good advertising, right? But even for one of them, or to speak of 24 of them, what is it that's beneficial? I've noted that when Prabhupada speaks, it's in Bhagavad Gita a couple of times, and in the Bhagavatam many times, when Prabhupada speaks about the kinds of austerities that are suitable for a Vaishnava, he'll mention consistently fasting on Ekadasi days and fasting on Janmashtami days. So what is it about fasting on Janmashtami and Ekadasi? It's just an authorized good thrashing, right? For people who like thrashings. No. It may be that also. Some people like austerities. But it's pleasing to Krishna. So if we can take up Pandava Nirjal Ekadasi or any Ekadasi or any austerity that we may have to do, rising early in the morning to perform Mangal Arati or whatever any other austerity we make that we may find to be an austerity, if we do that for a higher cause, like Dhritarashtra had an inner purpose, a higher inner purpose. He had that vision. So if we carry that vision, then the austerity is lightweight, it's nothing. It's insignificant. Of course, if we don't have that capacity and don't have the inner vision, then it's not a good idea to try to do that. There was one devotee who saw many of us observing Nirjal Ekadasi, every Ekadasi, so he was going to try to do that. You know the story. Anyway, he didn't have the capacity, so one devotee found him inside the walk-in refrigerator at 9 o'clock at night. He offered everything and was just gorging himself. Where no one could see him, but he was practically collapsed on the floor, sick to his stomach from eating whatever. Just so that's not a good idea. Trying to conduct some artificial austerities, but austerities that you can conduct, as Gandhari was following her husband. For her, it was relishable. She liked austerities. She was an ascetic. It wasn't a pain for her. But Yudhisthira, being soft-hearted, was very concerned about the fact that as an elderly woman she had to undergo those austerities and sufferings. So the trick, the message here is it's an open secret. How to engage in austerities, do it for Krishna. Know that by fasting on Ekadasi day and fasting on Janmashtami day, you're honoring Janmashtami day, you're honoring the appearance day of the Lord, you're freeing yourself from tending to the dictates of the body, but instead placing your consciousness upon Krishna. So on Ekadasi day, it's not just fasting from grains and beans, or fasting from whatever, But hearing and chanting about Krishna, increasing your, fixing your mind upon Krishna. And what Prabhupada says in the purport, it's a very short purport, but he says that it increases one's determination in devotional service. There's a series of, called the topmost yoga system, I think it's called. In Los Angeles, the devotees are reading the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada interrupts intervals and explains the meaning of the whole sixth chapter. So at one point someone asks Prabhupada a question in that series. Prabhupada, what's the best way to increase your determination in devotional service? Of course, there are many answers to that question, but what Prabhupada said in that particular recording was, if you voluntarily accept austerities, this is one way to help increase your determination in devotional service. So, upon the Vandir Jala Kadasi, how many would be very inspired to raise their hand and say, I'd like to become more determined in devotional service, yeah. So then, voluntarily, for the sake of fixing our consciousness with greater determination upon the goal of achieving Krishna's lotus feet, try to accept that austerity. Not artificially, but if you can. It's good. So one more verse in this section. Yudhisthira continues to speak to Narada. And this is the second verse in the whole chapter that's a very often quoted verse. Text 10, where Yudhisthira is speaking about Vidura, that you are like a place of pilgrimage because you carry Krishna within your heart, and wherever you go, you purify that place and turn that place into a tirtha. So this is, you are like the captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination. So the analogy of this human body being like a suitable boat to cross the ocean, and the spiritual master is like the captain of the boat. And the message of the Vedas are like favorable breezes to carry the boat to its destination. Thus addressed, the godly personality, Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. In the purport, Prabhupada gives three other qualities. They kind of match here, but it's very specific. Unless one had, so he's saying that there are different kinds of philosophers. Narada is the philosopher amongst the devas, so the best of all philosophers. Unless one has become a sufficiently learned philosopher by hearing the Vedanta philosophy from a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot be a learned philosopher devotee. So that one's here. Knows the conclusions of the Vedas. Somewhere here is Parampara. Has heard that in specific succession.
So 16 was
number 16.
I just skipped this with.
You, oh, okay, you took Parampara and merged it with that one.
Ashish told me, like, so I did that.
Okay. I guess we could just add it. Knows the conclusion of the Vedas as a result of Parampara. You don't need to know. Then he says, one must be very faithful, learned, and renounced. Otherwise, one cannot be a pure devotee. Let's say it again. One must be very faithful, learned, and renounced. Otherwise, one cannot be a pure devotee. So, some more qualities of a sadhu. So now, just cover the next section. I think that's as far as we're going to get. In the next section, Narada is going to extinguish the anxiety and lamentation of Yudhisthira and Sanjaya. And each of us as devotees are called upon either occasionally or regularly to do something like this within society, even in the workplace, because devotees. Devotees carry the qualities, spiritual quality, and when ordinary people come to understand, here's a person that has spiritual quality, what happens when they have a problem or some distress of life? They go to that person. They don't have to be wearing a badge. You can come and ask me how to help you solve a calamity in your life. But just the qualities of the devotees bring that situation. So how Narada Muni handles this is very instructive for us. There are certain principles, and Prabhupada points out the principles. Of course, he's dealing with a particular situation, but I'll try to highlight the general principles that he's dealing with. You can take lessons from Narada. So it starts off, he starts off very much like Vidura starts off with Dhritarashtra. How did Vidura begin with Dhritarashtra? He started by saying that invincible time is overtaking all of us. Not just you, Dhritarashtra, me too. But invincible time. There's nothing that can be done to stop it. And because there's nothing that can be done to stop it, in this case with Yudhisthira, there's no cause for lamentation. O pious king, do not lament for anyone. For everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all living beings and their leaders carry on worship to be well protected. It is he only who brings them together and disperses them. There's many examples, metaphors used to help illustrate this. The churning of the ocean waves that sometimes loosens seaweed from the growth in the ocean, and the same churning of the waves brings those clumps of seaweed together for some time. The same waves, after some time, remove the clumps of seaweed from one another. So, as we don't lament over the fact that, oh, those poor clumps of seaweed, they're no longer intertwined with the other clump, we should not lament over events that bring people together and disperse them. That's what he's saying. Now, what causes the lamentation? We don't lament over such things, worldly things that happen all the time, that we may lament when it happens in our case. Someone comes into our life and then someone leaves our life. And it's not that he's not saying Yudhisthira is dead, he's just saying he's no longer with you. And this has happened by the will of Providence, and see more deeply than your attachments. But one can't see deeper than attachments if one is deeply attached. So it's the same. Vidura was breaking the excessive attachment that Dhritarashtra had. Here Narada is breaking the apparent attachment of Yudhisthira by invoking the supremacy of God in the form of the time energy. And the time energy, because events, just like all of us coming together in this room. Now, some time ago we were some other place, and some time passed and we came here, and some more time is going to pass and we're going to disperse. So events don't happen without the influence of time. Of course, there's will. Will is also subordinate to time. We can will to be somewhere else. Maybe Vrindavan. It's too hot, Vrindavan. Right now it's too hot. But anyway, you might want to be in
Vrindavan right now, or someplace. But we can't just will to do that. The time factor has to act. And if the time factor acts and brings something together and disperses something, Yudhisthira's advice is we should not lament. We're all subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was placed only a foolish man says there is no God. Maharaj Yudhisthira was being convinced of this naked truth because he was greatly overwhelmed by a sudden departure of his old uncles and his aunt. So he's not the supreme authority, Yudhisthira. I have to admit that events happen in ways other than I would like them to. There must be an authority above me. But some persons will claim, no, there is no authority above me, there is no God. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was placed in that position, in the position of meeting the close of his life, according to his past deeds. He had already suffered or enjoyed the benefits accrued to him in the past. But due to his good luck, somehow or other, he had a good younger brother, Vidura, and by his instructions, he left to achieve salvation, closing all accounts in the material world. Now, the next paragraph I'm going to read, Prabhupada is discussing what's the influence of time, kala, and karma in our lives. Time, there's nothing you can do to stop time. And karma, well, you can try to neutralize karma or counteract karma, but it's a force that you can't stop. Anyway, here's Prabhupada's, this is the message of the sadhu Narada to Yudhisthira. Ordinarily, one cannot change the course of one's due happiness and distress by plan. Everyone has to accept them as they come, under the subtle arrangement of kala or invincible time. There is no use trying to counteract them. Three sentences saying the same thing. The best thing is, therefore, that one should endeavor to achieve salvation. And this prerogative is given only to man because of his developed condition of mental activities and intelligence. Only for human species are there different Vedic instructions for attainment of salvation during the human form of existence. One who misuses this opportunity of advanced intelligence is verily condemned and put into different types of miseries, either in this present life or in the future. That is the way the Supreme controls everyone. Very heavy. Very direct and very heavy. My dear Yudhisthira Maharaj, or we may be called upon to console someone, my dear friend, please listen very carefully. There's a higher force acting here, the force of invincible time. And if time brings events about, you can't stop them. And if time terminates those events, you can't continue them. So instead of being involved in wishing to control that which you have no control over, or again, if you have expectations that don't match reality, better to use what this human form of life is meant for, and that is apply yourself so you tolerate whatever happens with the material energy, because it's going to happen. Whether you like it or you don't like it, it's going to happen. The good will come and the suffering will come, and that's the way of life. But turn your attention to this ultimate goal. Again, this is the message of a sadhu. This number 13 here. helps others to see the spiritual alternatives. Exactly what Prabhupada is doing in the purport, exactly what Narada is doing with Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira, stop! Stop this lamenting over where is Dhritarashtra, events that you have no control over. Time has brought you together, time has separated you. Stop lamenting over this and turn your attention to the ultimate higher purpose of life. Because while you're lamenting like this, time is slipping by in your life. I'm going to skip ahead. To the purport of text 43, because Prabhupada makes the exception. So that paragraph I just read, that's the rule. Kala doesn't change for anyone and karma doesn't change for anyone, so don't try to be the controller of those things, but direct your attention to salvation according to proper means. Then he says, he makes the exception is, there are special cases which, by the will of the Lord, the resultant actions are changed. But that change can be affected by the will of the Lord only. In other words, not by our manipulations or bribery or... Doesn't work. It may work with government officials in India or something like that, but it doesn't work here. It doesn't work with the laws of God. If God wants to change things, He can change things, no problem. It's in His department, not in our department. Then Prabhupada writes, these changes of resultant actions are especially rendered by the Lord when a pure devotee is involved. The verse, this is Narada speaking, the verse is that as a player, it's a metaphor, as a player sets up and then disperses his playthings according to his own sweet will. So the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and separates them. So if Krishna wants, he can bring people together. If Krishna wants, he can disperse them. So Krishna is an autocrat. He's a benevolent autocrat, but he's an autocrat. There's no authority above him. Autocrat means he's not answerable to anyone. But he's loving, and so according to the loving quality of his devotee, he may make events happen that ordinarily would not happen because he wants them to happen. But he does so in reciprocation with the love of his devotees, not necessarily the cries of our requisition slips. Please take care of this order first. So then there's one other metaphor that Narada uses in this chapter. I'll read it. As a cow bound through the nose by a long rope is conditioned, so also human beings are bound by different Vedic injunctions and are conditioned to obey the orders of the Supreme. Now, Gulshan, when you were in New Vrindavan and the kids were taken by Balabhadra to show them how the oxen plow the fields, you got a chance to do that. Neha, did you get a chance to do that? In New Vrindavan, when you went there for Camp Krishna, you went with Balabhadra in the fields with the oxen. Did you go with that group? The oxen that plow the fields and he was showing how they do it? Yeah. So, did he use a rope to pull the rope this way and that way, or just voice signals? So in other words, he would pull the rope this way and say something. And pull the rope the other way and say another something. So the idea is, so the nose, there goes Neha. So the nose of those big oxen
They're very sensitive. Like somebody bonks us in the nose, it hurts, right? But their nose is very, very sensitive. We wouldn't recommend you do this, but you could, with all your strength, just go, pow, and they wouldn't even feel it. Shouldn't do it, but they wouldn't hurt them. But their nose is very sensitive. So a rope through their nose, and you little pull, you can control a big animal that way. And then they give the voice signal, I think it's gi and ha. Right? Gi and ha. Something like that. Anyway, it gets to the point where you can just call the signal and they'll go left or go right. And Prasanna Maharaj was telling me he was able to train animals so he could be in another field. And he could just call out. And then they would turn around and plow in a straight row. Animals can be trained like that. So people can also be trained like that. Like the cow or the bull is controlled by a rope through their nose. So it's used several times in the Bhagavatam. Human society voluntarily putting the rope of Vedic instructions, they become controlled by that. So religious people are controlled by Krishna, by submitting themselves to Vedic injunctions. In this way, we voluntarily condition ourselves, instead of to the modes of nature, we condition ourselves to the injunctions of the Vedas. We condition ourselves to whatever Krishna wants, that's what I'll do. Whatever Krishna doesn't want, I'm not going to do that. As soon as we get the signal, gi, ha, we'll go this way or go that way, whatever Krishna wants. So Krishna gives us some prompting from within the heart, or some instruction through a sadhu. All we have to do is receive the signal, gi, ha, and there we go. Do this with great enthusiasm, I'll do it. Don't do that. Very well, no problem. So that's the indication. So he's saying to Yudhisthira Maharaj that you're a religious person and you understand how God acts, and so he's giving you the indication. Now is time for Dhritarashtra to go, and so, and very well. Here's how Prabhupada is explaining the difference between how people who are religious and those who are irreligious conduct their lives. Every man is imperfect by constitution under conditions of material nature. And there is not the least possibility that even the most materially advanced man can enact perfect legislation. On the other hand, there is no such imperfection in the laws of God. If leaders are educated in the laws of God, there is no necessity of a makeshift legislative council of aimless men. Strong language. There is necessity of change in the makeshift laws of man, but there is no change in the God-made laws because they are made perfect by the all-perfect personality of Godhead. The codes of religion, scriptural injunctions, are made by liberal representatives of God in consideration of different conditions of living, and by carrying out the orders of the Lord, the conditioned living beings gradually become free from the clutches of material existence. The factual position of the living being is, however, that he is the eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, In his liberated state, he renders service to the Lord in transcendental love and enjoys a life of full freedom, even sometimes on an equal level with the Lord, or sometimes more than the Lord. But in the conditioned material world, every living being wants to be Lord of other living beings. And thus, by the illusion of Maya, this mentality of lording it over becomes a cause of further extension of conditional life. So, in the material world, the living being is still more conditioned until he surrenders unto the Lord by reviving its original state of eternal servitorship. That is the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita and all other recognized scriptures of the world. So the theme here is freedom comes by servitude, which is just the opposite of how the material world works. You become servant, and that's the bottom. And you're just controlled and exploited by those who are in the controlling position. So if you really want to get ahead in the world, you've got to become a controller, and don't be a servant. It works the opposite way in spiritual life. By taking the position of servitorship of the Supreme Lord, and just as Devarshi Narada is being called here as Bhagavan and being respected equally with the Lord by Yudhisthira, one who takes that position is freed from the material influences and becomes freed from the whole of material existence. Just a couple more for this section. Narada continues instructing. O King, in all circumstances, it gives the circumstances, he gives four different philosophies about the soul. In all circumstances, whether you consider, here's the first one, the soul to be an eternal principle, or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit. Regardless of those circumstances, whatever conception you're carrying, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. That's pretty strong, maybe dogmatic sounding statement. The word that's used in the Sanskrit is moha jat, or born out of illusion, born out of bewilderment. Sneha anyatra moha jat, the affection, illusory affection, due to mistaking the body to be the self, and we become very joyful when that bodily relation is within our grip, and very, very distressed when it's no longer there. So Prabhupada concludes this paragraph, or purport, this way. In our daily experience, we find so many transformations of matter from one form to another, just like this thing, seaweed coming together and separating. So many combinations of matter coming together and then dispersing. But we do not lament for such changing features. In any of these cases, the force of divine energy is uncheckable. No one has any hand in it, and thus there is no cause of grief. Once again, it's this sense of dependency upon the Supreme Lord, that it's His position as the controller, it's our position as the servant. We should be happy in our position as servant, leave controlling up to the controller. Let God do His program and we'll do ours, serving Him. If He wants it to be this way, so be it. If He wants it to be that way, so as long as we can go on serving. This illusory affection is very, very powerful. There's just a little side story here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, King Chitraketu is
on the one hand appreciated as a Mahabhagavata Vaishnav on an equal level with Lord Shiva, but we also find that King Chitraketu was very much anxious to have a son, and he was so much anxious to have a son that it was Narada, right? Narada gave him his benediction.
Yes.
That he would have one son, but he would not live for long, and so his name would be Harsha Shoka. He would be very happy, and then very distressed. And so when the son was born, he was very happy, and shortly after birth the son died, and he was very distressed. And he was lamenting and lamenting and lamenting. And then a very wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam class was given by his son. His dead son, deceased son, began to speak. And of course, Chitraketu listened very carefully. And the lesson was this very same lesson. So the course of narrating the story, the same thing that Narada is saying to Yudhisthira here. This illusory affection is due to our bodily identification. And we need to accept the will of the Supreme Lord. Again, just going back to this whole story of Vidura and the birth of Vidura and Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Same argument was given by Grandfather Bhishma to Satyavati when Satyavati's two sons, Chitrangada and Vichitraviri, were both deceased before there were children that were produced to carry on the lineage of Maharaj Santanu. She was grief-stricken and very concerned, the noble queen, how to carry on the dynasty. So Bhishma was saying, you should see events more deeply than just the surface of them. The will of providence is here. How else can you explain? How did something like this happen? And you want to control beyond the control of the Supreme Lord. But if our position is trying to serve, and that's what he was moving her mentality to, instead of trying to control, try to serve. Like one devotee just today came to me, something exchange, and he said, okay, I'll go and tell him. No, don't go and tell him, go and ask him. Don't go in the mood of controlling, go in the mood of serving. Oh, okay. We need reminders. Sadhu's Sangha is there to remind us of what we have a tendency to forget. Let the controlling business be in the hand of God and the serving business be in the hand of his devotees. We should assist one another in trying to serve the will of the Supreme Lord. That's Narada's message. That was Narada's message to Chitraketu through the deceased son. The will of the Lord is you will not have a son except the will of the Lord. The will of the Lord is you will become king, you become king. The will of the Lord is some relative will be dispersed. That's the will of the Lord. These lessons are very important for us, once again, in how to help console somebody that's in a distressed condition. Of course, not everyone can understand all of these things. At least these are principles that we can bear in mind. Try to remember God. Try to fix your mind on that which is eternal and invincible and reverses it. In the course of material energy, it's unstoppable. The force of time is there. Conclusion. Therefore, give up your anxiety due to ignorance of the self.